The Forever Man is so big, he can hardly get into a car. But he manages to do just that in Chapter 4. Each year, several residents passed on during the winter. But as the winter slipped by, no one died. Spring arrived, and everyone who lived or worked at Madison Acres looked with anticipation to warmer temperatures, flowers, and the rebirth of the world. Ezra Johnson had done his best to find out more about Simon, but it was to no avail. The big man would smile whenever they spoke, and when the director asked him a question about his past, his last name, or anything related to his fortune, it seemed to have no end, he would say, "In due time, Mr. Johnson, in due time," and then he would change the subject. Simon had become the de facto leader of the guest. Under his guidance and urging, the residents of the home did all sorts of things they had not done before. They took buses on day trips to a Phillies baseball game, a tour of the Gettysburg battlefield and the President Dwight Eisenhower farm, to Longwood Gardens, Hershey Park, and other destinations. No one was excluded. Those in wheelchairs also went on the trips. Madison Acre employees went along to enjoy the sights and push wheelchairs when necessary. The big man paid for all of it. The fun and joy of simply being alive was evident in all of them, and eyes sparkled and smiles abounded even among the oldest of the people. It was as if life had returned in all its power, and the shackles of aging had fallen away. It was like being reborn. The director marveled at the change in the people and the demeanor of his staff. He saw employees singing, laughing, and whistling as they went about their work, and he found himself envying them. He wished that he could drop his guard, lay aside his cynicism for a moment, and laugh along with them. However, he was the director. He could not stop being aloof and distancing himself from others. He had to maintain control, even if he was the only one who did so. Then came the day when Simon approached him with a question. "What church do you go to, Mr. Johnson?" "I thought that I might impose on you this coming Sunday," Simon said. "I attend the John Wesley Methodist Church a few miles from here." "In what way do you wish to impose?" Ezra responded stiffly. "I wanted to ask you if you would take me to church with you. I would like to attend services. And since I don't have a car, I was thinking that you could take me to and from the church this coming Sunday." The director said, "Well, I know you attend the chapel services here when outside clergy come in each week. Why would you want to go to my church?" "Each church is a house of God, is it not?" Simon asked softly. "Yes, but God is everywhere. I simply want to visit a church. Will you take me?" There was no way Ezra Johnson could refuse such a request, not after what Simon had spent so freely for the people and staff of Madison Acres. "I can pick you up at 10:30 this Sunday at the front door. It's a traditional service. We have a small but loyal congregation. Men wear suits and ties, and women dress. It sounds perfect." "I will dress accordingly. Thank you very much. I look forward to it," Simon said, smiled, and turned to go to the dining room. Ezra's next thought was, how will he fit in the car? The director used a Chevrolet Suburban that belonged to the home whenever he had to take a resident somewhere, which was infrequently, because other staff members normally transported residents when bus transportation was not available. It was one of the biggest SUVs, and he hoped Simon could get into it. The director pulled up at the front door of Madison Acres promptly at 10:30 a.m. Sunday morning, and Simon was waiting for him. He looked splendid in what he had to be an expensive charcoal-gray double-breasted suit with a crisp white shirt, yellow tie, and black shoes with such a shine that they actually were mirror-like in the morning sun. Ezra had put the passenger seat all the way back, but Simon still had to scrunch down to get into the car. The top of his head was against the lining of the car's roof, and his knees were against the dashboard. The director said, "I see why you prefer to walk. Must be difficult for someone your size to find the car that's built to accommodate you." Simon smiled at him. "I'm not often in cars, but this is a big model. What kind is it?" Johnson gave him an incredulous look. "It's a Suburban, one of the biggest SUVs made in America. How could you not know about it?" "You forget that I'm not from America. What is an SUV?" "Well, the letters stand for Sport Utility Vehicle. A Suburban is one of the earliest SUV models. This one holds up to 9 passengers, although I had to put your seat back as far as it will go, and it doesn't leave much leg room for the person who might sit behind you. I'm surprised you don't know more about cars. Don't you have such vehicles in Israel?" "I told you that I'm from Israel, but I came here from Africa. I spend much of my time in very poor areas of the world where transportation is limited. I walk a great deal or travel on buses and trucks that might be available. The back of a truck is often the best place for me to ride." The director had very few extended conversations with the big man, and he had not had much of an opportunity to question him at length. "Where were you in Africa?" "I go from one place to another, all over, actually. The people there have been virtually forgotten by the developed world. There's great suffering in many places. I help them as much as I can," Simon said. "That's very noble of you," Johnson said. "There's nothing noble about helping someone. It's my task to find suffering and to do what I can to alleviate it." "Why do you do it?" "Help those people," the director asked him. "Why do you help the people at Madison Acres?" Simon replied softly. This question had never been asked of Ezra Johnson, and he stammered, "Well, it's not me helping, actually. It's the company I serve. It's my job to run the operation and see that everything is in good order." "That doesn't answer my question," Simon said. "Why do you help the people who live at Madison Acres? You must have gotten into this work for some reason other than just doing a job. What is it?" Ezra Johnson had never felt as threatened as he did at this moment. Long ago, he had hidden a great secret away from the world, and he had not felt this vulnerable in 20 years. It was a long moment before he answered. He stared into the eyes of the big man next to him. "When I ask you where you are from, what your last name is, and why you are at Madison Acres, because you obviously could go anywhere and do anything you want, you always change the subject. All of us have secrets, Simon. I can't give you an answer. Neither of us has been totally honest with the other. I've broken rules to allow you to stay at Madison Acres. I've written down false information for you on forms. I have kept the truth about you from my superiors because I don't even know what your truth is. Don't ask me to reveal myself when you are not willing to tell me who you are and why you are here." There was anger in Ezra Johnson's voice when he said this, and his face contorted in rage. Simon said softly, "When it is appropriate, you will know what you need to know. I am here because my task is to help others. I ask if you would bring me to your church because there is a task to do there as well. I go where I am called to go. I do not mean to sound mysterious, but there are things in the universe that few men fully understand. I have no wish to pry into your private life, but I am concerned about you. I know that you harbor pain in your soul. I see it. I would like to be your friend, if you would allow me to be." In his lifetime, no one had ever told Ezra that he wanted to be a friend. And he clenched his jaw. "You want to be my friend? I have no friends. Friendship has no place in my life. I will not discuss this further. I have no wish to continue this discussion. We are here." The director turned off the road into the parking lot of the church. It was built of gray stone with a bell tower and a cross gleaming in the pale spring sunlight. Lovely stained glass windows reflected the light. The window on the street side showed an image of Jesus kneeling by the rock in the Garden of Gethsemane. People were getting out of their cars and walking towards the double front doors. Simon was silent. He watched the people through the windshield. It took a few moments for Ezra Johnson to regain his composure. When he finally did, he exited the car without saying another word to the big man. Simon ducked his head and squeezed his massive frame out of the front seat and stood up. He looked at the church and its grounds. Built in 1925, John Wesley United Methodist Church sat on 5 acres of ground. The sanctuary had been remodeled twice, and it could hold 200 people in its pews. A parish hall and Sunday school rooms were attached to the main building. There was a cemetery adjacent to the parish hall side of the structure, and the graveyard was well maintained. Hundreds of tombstones were visible scattered throughout clusters of well-established trees of great size, including oaks, maples, pines, and other varieties. The scene was pleasant. Simon saw gravel walkways, stone benches, hedges, and other nicely arranged bushes and foliage that looked healthy and well-kept. He turned his eyes to Ezra Johnson and stood silently waiting. Johnson had mastered himself, and remembering his manners and the fact that Simon had been very good to the people and staff of Madison Acres, said, "I must apologize to you. I do not wish to offend you. You've shown great kindness and compassion for so many." Simon did not allow him to finish his sentence. "Mr. Johnson, there's no apology necessary. You were kind enough to bring me to your church this morning. Let's enjoy the service and the rest of the day." The two men turned and walked towards the entrance to the church. They were given bulletins by a smiling man at the door, who said hello to Johnson, who in turn introduced Simon to him, identifying the greeter as Thomas Bigelow. When they had walked through the foyer and passed into the sanctuary, the wooden pews, the lighting, and the light streaming through the stained glass windows above the altar created a serene atmosphere. Simon sighed and said quietly, "I see why you come here. It's quite beautiful and peaceful, too." "The attendance has fallen off in the last few years," Johnson said, "but the new pastor just began 3 months ago, and we hope he can help build up our membership again. Many of the people have been here for generations. Our service is traditional. We like it that way, but some people wish we had a more contemporary service." People were talking, and then they quieted when the music began. A group of about 12 people dressed in their choir robes were seated to the left of the altar. A white-haired organist, with her back to the congregation, began playing the hymn, "How Great Thou Art," and people stood, opening their hymnals to the appropriate page and joining with the choir. They did 3 stanzas of the song, and then a boyish-looking young pastor in his black robe left his chair to the right of the altar and stood at the pulpit. His name was Samuel Blankenship, according to the bulletin, and he opened with prayer. The service continued with more songs from the hymnal, the Apostles' Creed, Lord's Prayer, another hymn, and the sermon. His title was "Live for Today," and he used several passages of Scripture to illustrate his main points of view of how life should be lived in the 21st century. When the service ended, several people approached and were introduced by Johnson to Simon as one of our residents at Medicine Acres. Simon towered over everyone in the church, even the tallest people in the congregation, and the huge man was welcomed warmly. This was the first time Johnson had ever brought a guest to church, and a couple of people said that they were glad that he had finally done so. One woman urged him to bring other residents in the future. When Simon met the young pastor at the door, the two men appeared to bond immediately. Simon asked if they needed more choir members, and he eagerly said, "Yes, the more the merrier. We need all the help we can get." "When does your choir practice?" Simon asked him. They practice at 6:30 Thursday evenings. You are more than welcome to come and participate. Bring others, too. If people enjoy singing hymns, they can come here and join the choir," Pastor Blankenship said, smiling. When they got to the car, Ezra Johnson said, "Looks like you made a friend or two today. If you want to come to choir practice, I can arrange transportation for you. If you ask others to come with you, maybe we can add some new members to the roll." "That's a good idea. I'll find out how many want to come with me," Simon said, smiling as usual. The two men rode in silence back to the retirement home, and when Johnson pulled up in front of the door to let Simon out, the big man turned to him and said, "Thank you again for this morning. It's been a long time since I was inside a church, and it means a great deal to me. It's good to be in his house again. I'll see you tomorrow, Mr. Johnson." They said their goodbyes. As Ezra Johnson drove home where he would have his solitary Sunday meal, he thought about the big man. He wished that he could be that outgoing, so much so that people were drawn to him. He also wished he could wash away the stain on his soul and be free of the thing that tormented him. He wished he had a friend who would listen to him and not judge him. It would be so good to be free to laugh and at ease with others. If only there was some way to tell his story. If only he could find the courage to be as he once was. If only.